Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. There's a situation at Rutgers that the Trump administration has gotten involved in now that has overtones for Jews, Palestinians, civil rights, and free political speech. The case involves several claims by the Zionist Organization of America. Narrowly, it's about an alleged decision at a speech by a Palestinian rights advocate to charge admission to Rutgers students who look Jewish, but not to others. But more broadly, it's about where Middle East studies programs at college campuses can be held to create discriminatory, hostile environments for Jewish students. Can they be accused of that because of what they teach? And about the definition of anti-Semitism and the definition of what it means to be a Jew for purposes of the Education Department civil rights enforcement, a member of an ethnic group, not just a religion. And there's the fact, according to the New York Times, that the Education Department seems to be stepping up its civil rights protections for Jews on campuses, while Education Secretary Betsy DeVos has been limiting other kinds of civil rights enforcement. There's a lot of elements to the story. Let's try to unpack it with Jane Eisner, editor-in-chief of the Jewish newspaper, The Forward. Thanks for coming on, Jane. Welcome back to WNYC.
It's a pleasure to be here, as always.
To start with the narrowest issue, the pro-Palestinian speech was back in 2011, and Jewish students at Rutgers were allegedly charged admission while other students were not. That obviously would not be okay if true. But the Obama administration investigated and did not find enough evidence to back that up, and they closed the case. Now the Trump administration has reopened it. What can you tell us about the specific incident and the evidence for it?
Well, it seems that the extra charges arose because there was an organizational attempt to protest the speech, and there was concerns about security. And so they realized that they needed to charge more to cover the security. There was apparently an email that went out that said, all these Zionists are going to show up, and we should charge them and not others. I wasn't there. I don't know the actual facts. I do know that the Obama administration studied this carefully. Honestly, I'm still not sure why the Zionist Organization of America had standing in a case that happened on a college campus. Mm-hmm. And that's an important element of all of this, Brian, because many of these disputes about free speech and hate speech on campus are fueled by people from outside the university, not those who might feel aggrieved inside.
So there are two possible explanations for the charge of admission. One is that everybody was charged, but it was a late decision because they realized that they would have to raise money to pay for security. The other is that the pro-Palestinian group that was hosting the speech said that they should only charge Jewish or Zionist students.
Exactly. And if that was the case, then of course that's discriminatory. I think that's quite evident. But I have to assume that that's what the Obama administration studied carefully and concluded that, no, it was not discriminatory.
And even if that was done in a discriminatory way by the group, it's not something that Rutgers allegedly did per se. So is there a claim against the school that goes beyond that?
I don't see it unless we start talking about a hostile environment, and that seems awfully fuzzy to me.
So it would have to do with the school's response to an incident like that, right?
I understand that that's the case, and I believe that the school really distanced themselves from it.
I gather from a New York Times report that they were asked, the school was asked by pro-Palestinian activists to distance itself from the Hillel Jewish student body organization on campus, and Rutgers refused to distance themselves. Well, now we get to some of the larger issues. Trump's Education Department has newly embraced a definition of anti-Semitism that includes, quote, claiming that the state of Israel is a racist endeavor. Now, That's a longtime topic of debate about setting up a nation where one religion or ethnic group has a right to rule, regardless of who the majority population is. Does the Education Department mean to suggest that anyone on any college campus who argues that position is guilty of anti-Semitism and therefore violating the civil rights of Jewish students there?
Well, I really cannot speak for the Education Department or the Secretary, but there's no doubt that this is really a complicated issue. So just a little background, this kind of new definition, more broad definition of anti-Semitism actually arose in the European context, where in fact there is a dangerous link between attitudes and activities and behaviors that claim to be anti-Zionist but really are anti-Semitic. And so this broader definition was drafted, and it's been adopted by lots and lots of different places. It's really important, though, to remember that the person who was key to drawing up this new definition, Kenneth Stern from the American Jewish Committee, has said it should not apply in this broad fashion to college campuses and universities because of the whole question of protecting free academic speech.
But the person setting these new standards is an Education Department official named Kenneth Marcus, who the New York Times reports was previously an activist known for pressuring campuses to squelch anti-Israel speech and activities. Someone with that background might be an odd choice to oversee civil rights on campus for all groups equally. What's your understanding of Kenneth Marcus and his agenda and his appropriateness to that job?
Well, again, I can't speak for his agenda per se, but I do think that there are serious questions about whether or not he's appropriate for this, because his background has been to try to promote this much broader agenda and to make it so that there really are serious questions about whether or not free speech and academic inquiry are being protected on campuses. Look, this is really hard. And I don't think there's any doubt that there are times when professors, speakers, whatever, will equate Israel as a racist country or have racist origins, will treat it differently than other nations. I myself am not in favor of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement because of that. However, there are people who do promote those views and don't believe that Israel shouldn't exist as a Jewish state. They criticize certain policies, especially the occupation. And we have to make room for those people in a civil and respectful debate.
Listeners, we can take some phone calls for Jane Eisner, editor-in-chief of the Jewish newspaper, The Forward. I wonder if anybody listening was at that speech or around it back in Rutgers in 2011 by a pro-Palestinian speaker that sparked this claim of discrimination against Jewish students in the first place, or to talk about any of these larger issues. Like the definition of anti-Semitism that should be used by the Education Department in determining when a hostile environment is created for Jews. Also the free speech issues. Also, and we'll get to this, one of the interesting things about the new definition of anti-Semitism that they're using at the Federal Education Department is that it defines Jews as members of an ethnic group, not just a religion. And maybe some of you have experiences or feelings about that. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Let me ask you about that, Jane, because that's pretty interesting. I gather that it's really a bureaucratic consideration, the reason that they're saying Jews for the purpose of civil rights enforcement in the Education Department includes not just people who identify religiously as Jews, but people who are ethnically Jewish. And I gather it's because the education has no jurisdiction, the Education Department has no jurisdiction over religious discrimination, but it does over national origin discrimination.
Yes, I think so. And look, this goes to the heart of sort of the incredible advantage and dilemma in being a Jew in the modern world. I mean, we are both a faith and a tribe, a religion and a people. And that's unusual. It's not either or, it's both and. And certainly there are plenty of Jews who identify as being Jewish and do not religiously observe or believe. And yet we don't fit into many of the other ways in which we think about ethnic or racial distinctions, because most, not all, but most Jews are white and don't face the same kind of discrimination that people of color face.
Alan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Brian. I have a great deal of concern about this, the question that goes back to youth group discussions 40 years ago at my synagogue, and it never seems to go away. As someone who's modern Orthodox and thinks that the main value in my view of Judaism is the prophetic teaching, which includes so much about justice and about even environmental wisdom that is very little noted by most people, it seems like a distortion of our religion to let governments define us primarily in terms of ethnicity, because that draws further attention away from what I see as the core reason for being of the tribe and the faith. If we're just going to focus on the tribe as an independent reason for pride and identity and ignore the outward-looking teaching of the faith, I hate to say it, but I don't see as much value in the enterprise.
Why can't it be either, Alan? Because I'm sure you know people who, I mean, I know people who are strongly identified atheists, but also will say, I'm a proud member of the tribe, quote-unquote tribe, the Jewish people. Peoplehood is such a big thing, you know, to Jews. And discrimination takes place based on how others perceive you. So people could not know what your religious beliefs are, but look at you as Jewish and discriminate against you, and that happens, right?
Right, and that's another risk, because if you allow other people to define what you are in terms of a negative process, in terms of their bias against you, then you have abdicated your own role in defining yourself in a positive way. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a problem with some Jews, frankly, who have an atheistic view of the existence of God, but are willing to adhere to the moral teachings of the tradition, because there's no conflict between those. The moral teachings stand alone, and they're valuable in themselves, whether you happen to believe in an absolute deity or not. But if you abandon all of those positive values and just look at ethnicity, what you're really doing is letting the state, in negative terms, define who we are, but people who may be subjected to bias in the name of our ethnicity.
Just one more follow-up on that, though. Like, take Barack Obama, for example. If he was discriminated against on the basis of being seen as black, he could say, but wait, I'm half white. But it wouldn't matter, because that's how he was seen by the people who were doing the discriminating.
Yeah,
same applies to Jews, right?
Something like that happened when McCain defended Obama by saying, oh, no, in response to the accusation that he was a Muslim, the answer was, oh, no, he's a good person, as if to say implicitly, oh, yeah, being a Muslim is somehow bad.
Right.
People credit McCain for defending him, but
right.
There's always a danger
that other,
in these things.
Other point. Alan, thank you very much. Sean in Toms River, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sean. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, a great discussion. I just want to ask the guest, has this been considered or risen to the level of the, let's say, the more anti-Israel or anti-Jewish state speech on campus? Do they consider this having risen to the level of hate speech? And insofar as the right wing gets so angry when campuses try to block people like Milo Yiannopoulos and other people like that on the far right, and they're, you know, sometimes pro-Nazi sounding speech, and they call it hate speech, are the right wing who defend here in this defending Israel, are they seeing that as the same?
Well, those are really important points. First of all, I think it's fair to say that people on either end of the political spectrum want to protect their own right to express their views and find those on the opposite end quite objectionable. And there's a real question about free speech and academic freedom in that context. I think it's also important not to make this not to give the impression that college campuses around the country are hotbeds of anti-Semitism and anti-Israel sentiment. It is real on many campuses, but for one thing is it's rarely turned into any sort of resolution or action or administrative concern. And for the most part, all the work that we do, I mean, we have now just published our second annual college guide. We have more than 200 colleges and universities with Jewish presence, part of the guide. And we ask about this. And yes, it's real for some students, but nowhere at the level that you might think if you only listened to the activists.
Z in East Brunswick, you're on WNYC. This is as close to Rutgers as I think we're going to get on the calls on the board. Hi, Z, you're on WNYC.
Hey, how are you, Brian?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, like I was telling the screener earlier, is that basically what it feels like is a forced shaping and controlling of the narrative and understanding of what the situation is like for Palestinians living in the occupied territories. I mean, it's a simple Google search, right? It's literally a simple Google search. And you can see images and pictures of children looking over a wall at other children jumping into a swimming pool while these kids haven't had access to clean drinking water. And where they live literally looks like a war zone. You have human beings waiting in lines and queues to work basically for slave labor on the other side. I mean, we're supporting this with our tax dollars. $40+ billion a year goes to Israel, while people here in the United States struggle to afford health care and struggle to pay for education. I mean, this is the epitome of ridiculousness. Now we're going to enshrine this into our legislation so we can no longer even criticize it in our educational institutions?
Z, thank you very much. So here's the question as it pertains to this conversation. Mm-hmm. If Z went on to the Rutgers campus and said what he just said here, would he be at risk of being held to be discriminating against Jewish students there?
Well, I don't agree with his assessment, but I would hope that that is a point of view that could be expressed. And, you know, what you say, Z, it is true. I don't have to go on online to see Google pictures. I've been there myself many times. And the question is not just what the conditions are, but also, frankly, who's to blame, who's responsible. And in my view, there's a shared responsibility there. And so then you discuss whether or not policies are contributing to the suffering of the Palestinian people and whose policies are there. And that should be a free and fair discussion to have.
One more call on the idea of treating Jews as an ethnicity in addition to a religion for civil rights enforcement purposes. Rosalind in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Rosalind.
Hello. Thank you very much, Brian. This is really a great show and a great discussion. I want to ask Jane Eisner, in response to your statement that most Jews are white, and this question about either or both and a faith and a people, what would you say to Jews of color right here in New York City and all over the country? What would you say to Jews in China and India, Jews who come from Morocco, Palestinian Jews, Jews from Iraq? What would you say to the idea that Jews are actually a multicultural, polyglot, diasporic people, not one race or one ethnicity?
I don't think Jane's going to disagree with any of this, right?
No, Rosalind, I completely agree with you. And frankly, just to go back to a prior caller, Alan, I was very moved by what he said because to some degree, his argument, while coming from a modern Orthodox perspective, also pertains to Jews of color because many, not all, but many convert to Judaism. And so there, it's not a matter of ethnicity or race. It's a matter of choosing to be part of a faith tradition. And so this is where it gets very complicated. I would say to all the Jews that you mentioned, Aslan, like, welcome. We should be doing more to acknowledge this. Certainly, there are, you know, half of Israeli culture, half of the Israeli population is not typically white Eastern European. And so I think this is where defining us as a specific ethnicity does become problematic.
Rosalind, thank you very much for your call. Just last question for you, Jane. The Times said Education Secretary Betsy DeVos has gone to great lengths to limit civil rights enforcement in other kinds of cases. Now, we wouldn't want an Education Department Civil Rights Office, of all things, that's more concerned with the civil rights of some than of others. How can that be proven, that they're now going to do that? They're going to elevate the civil rights of Jews on college campuses above others, which is the suspicion or the fear of what's going to result from this. And how can they be held accountable if that happens?
You know, I'm going to go back to what I do. And that is, I think this is a task for good journalism, to really understand what this department is doing, and to lay it out there and to hold them accountable. I would also expect that activists who are looking for their help in terms of protecting students, vulnerable students on college campuses, would also do that. I think it's really important that we remember we are a significant part of the American population, but a very small part. And others also need government protection.
Jane Eisner, editor-in-chief of The Forward, thank you so much.
Thank you.